You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, it's an Apple TV Plus exclusive talk about things Diablo show. If you don't have an Apple TV subscription, I'm sorry in advance. This is Apathetic Enthusiasm. Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. I am Brandon. That fine person was Travis.
Hello.
He's the one who practices his intro timing.
I don't write it. I don't practice it. Half the time, I don't even think while I'm doing it.
Perfectly matches with the timing of the music. I had to manually fade out because I was like, oh, he's talking too long. It's just going to cut. It's just going to stop all of a sudden. And then he's going to keep talking. It's good.
If only there was a way to edit these podcasts to clean that up in some way, shape, or form. Not how we do things around here at Apathetic Enthusiasm.
That's not entirely true. I've been editing lately, mostly because
your microphone has been broken.
Yeah, it keeps jacking up. So it sounds okay here, right? It's after the fact. It's like, oh, it got all staticky all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So it's very frustrating. So thanks for bearing with us. You might not have even noticed if you listened to our last episode. About three quarters of the way through, around the 38-minute mark, is when I swapped over to the YouTube version of the audio. There's slight difference there. Levels as well are different between you and I.
Yeah. No, I'm sure.
But it's fine. It's fine. Thanks for listening.
Actually, let's talk about our levels for a second. You talk.
Okay. You talk.
And then I talk. Yeah, our levels are different.
You talk. Yeah.
No, they're always. Talk and I talk.
It's we the talk.
Facts of life.
When I dip, you dip, we dip.
All right. You tell us if those levels are better in the Twitch chat. That's right. We're streaming live right now over at twitch.tv/apathetic enthusiasm. You can also check out the video version that Brandon mentioned earlier at youtube.com/apathetic enthusiasm. Thanks to everybody that likes, subscribes, does all the things, the comments. We love the comments on the YouTubes. If you want to follow us around the web, you can find us still on Twitter for a limited time only. At Apathusiast, I am at Jugglemino. He is at Barnyard Cruise. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/apathetic enthusiasm show. Send us an email, apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. We're on Instagram at apathetic_enthusiasm. And our website, apatheticenthusiasm.com. Get all the things over there. Finally, big thank you to the patrons over at patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. If you're not watching Twitch and you want bonus content, you want to see all the post shows, you want to see Brandon making sweet, sweet musical videos, and anything else his creative mind decides to post on a given week, if you're not over on Patreon, you're missing out. So go check it out. Patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. Those are the plugs seamlessly woven into the general conversation of the show.
What a wicked web we weave. What housekeeping podcasting duties we do to deceive. Okay. Well, there we go. Apathetic enthusiasm opening. That was fun. Travis, how are you doing? What have you been up to? I haven't talked to you in a week.
Oh, you know, I'm good. I pulled my groin.
Oh no, where'd you pull it to? that joke, that doesn't make sense.
No, I was playing sports.
Were you supposed to push your groin?
I was playing recreational sports with my coworkers.
Oh, man.
And I have a tendency to run a lot, but I tend to run in one direction at a very steady pace, not cut quickly around a defender and attempt to dart towards an end zone. And so in doing so, I did slightly injure myself. It's funny how much a groin injury is just straight up comedy when you have teens and preteens around the house. Because anytime you say groin, they're like, oh, did you hurt your balls? And I'm like, nope, it's a different part of the anatomy completely. But it's feeling better now, and I'll probably go running tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Good. Speaking of running, my coworker Mike. Shout out to coworker Mike.
What up, Mike?
I was talking to him. Well, I talk to him every day because he's my coworker. But he the other day he was saying that he listened to an episode or two of the show, and we talked a lot about running. And I said, well, good news, we haven't talked about running in a little bit because we knew that we talked about running a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
So shout out to Mike because I ran 12 and a half miles.
Is that a PR? Like, is that your biggest distance to date? Have you ever run further than 12 and a half miles?
No, that's the longest. I basically almost did a half.
I know. You sent me that screenshot over the weekend and I was like, hot dang. Look at this guy.
Yeah.
Just reaching new heights.
New heights indeed. It was on my plan to run that. And so like I was prepping for it all week. I was like, okay, here's the date. It's like 6 miles to my parents and then 6 miles back. That's what I'm gonna run. I'm gonna run there, I'm gonna run back. There's lots of hills and stuff like that. And I bought one of those runner belts, and I got a little bottle of water that I put in there, and I grabbed like a protein bar. I put that little protein bar in there, and I got to my parents' house, and I drank the water, ate some of that protein bar, and ate some of it. I didn't do the whole thing, just a little bit, just a sure. Nibble,
just enough calories to keep you going.
That's right. And I was like, you know, hopefully this will kick in by the end of the run, right? And I got to like mile 9 3/4, and I like, whoa. and I couldn't run long distance anymore. Like I could like run maybe like a half a mile at a time, if that. And okay. I had to stop because I was like, I don't have any energy. I did make it to the 12.43 or whatever it was.
Well, the good news is you only have to go like another half a mile and change, and you'll have your half marathon done.
I know. Well, in my mind, I was like, well, I that's the furthest I've ever run, and I didn't really train the way I should be training for, sure. for this, because I'm only running twice a week, right? So yeah. It's you know it's putting me at risk for injury anyway. But I'm like, well, if I got that far and I ran a little bit here and there towards the end, even with the walking, it's still pushing myself towards that final goal. So. Yeah.
That's really great. And I'm still hoping to run a half with you the day of your half in spirit, because I'm going to be somewhere else in the world. I'll eat pizza that day, actually. But I will get up in the morning and go run a half marathon that day in solidarity. And because okay. I'm trying to look for excuses to keep my distance up with my running. But that's really cool. I'm glad you're cool. Not feeling hurt as of now, right? You're still
no. No, I'm good. I'm good now. Tell you what, my knees, I tell you, please. It's like walking like Forrest Gump at the very beginning.
He's got braces on his legs.
Ow. You like even while icing the hell out of him, like no, these tendons are not happy with me. But it'll be fine. And then I'll never run again. So anyways, good. Moving Perfect. On.
Love it. That's it for run talk. There was some other part of the conversation that I really wanted to bring up to you, and I've forgotten it. Oh, no. I know. It's the other thing that the big news that happened this weekend. In our personal lives, and in no way for everyone else in the world. I booked tickets. I booked the ticks.
Comic-Con minute.
So barring any unforeseen circumstances that may end this trip completely.
Bill Barr.
I don't know. Maybe he'll be there picketing the writer strike. But yeah, Comic-Con travel has been coordinated for me. I mean, you're just going to drive, right? Because you're in the same state and everything's like pretty close. It's like, what, 5-10 minutes away? But yeah, so if you are listening to this and you plan to be at San Diego Comic-Con or in generally in the San Diego area for Comic-Con, keep an eye out for us. We'll be the guys walking around trying to look like we know what we're doing with these press passes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be good times. We'll see what's
good times
going on.
Had by all.
Going to see what's up with the WGA and the SAG. And although the Directors Guild, they agreed upon a deal, the members still have to vote yes on it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of directors on Twitter that are like, no, vote no on this. Because one of them I read earlier, this is kind of an aside that we're going down, but I read earlier that one of the things that they didn't even bother with was asking for streaming services to provide the statistics and the metrics behind, you know, who's watching, how often they're watching, right? Because the whole ways of lives are dependent on residuals. Yeah. And if, you know, like Chelsea gets like 28 cents anytime her episode of Angry Beavers goes on, right? Like
just cashing in them checks.
Just raking in the dough.
Tell you what, they play this a few more times, we can get a pack of gum.
But also like on there, like the episode that she's in, like if people buy that to watch it on like Amazon or whatever, she gets part of the residuals as well. Well, if they're just streaming on Nickelodeon.com, how do they know how much money to give? So WGA, SAG, and the DGA, like that's something that they need to fight for now while they still have bargaining power.
Yeah. What? Yeah. You're closer to it than I am. I'm just out here in the breezy plains fighting tornadoes. And excessive pollen.
Out there you have strike breakers. They're like, oh, got ourselves a labor union trying to strike? Let's go break them up. That's what happens out there in Oklahoma.
This is not far from the truth, as they're actively producing films out here right now. They're not writing them, apparently, but they're producing them. Talk about the Directors Guild. Any movement with the Writers Guild, or is this still sort of,
Toss-up? Still a toss up. No movement. SAG has till the 30th to, like, they already have the strike authorization, but they still have till the 30th of June to come up with a deal. So, WGA hasn't moved at all. At this point in time, like it has to be a concerted effort,
By
those major unions. So
I support all the creative folks out there. I got to be honest, I'm not feeling the hit so much in my normal viewing the way I did in the early aughts writer strike, and I wonder if that just says something to the way we consumed content, the way we watch television, and how different it is now almost 20 years later, because so much is streaming, so much is already produced and, you know, being trickled out on streaming platforms, that it's just, it's really different. I don't know. I wonder if that's why it's taking so long for them to come up with, stiff.
But potentially they've got a lot of shows. There are a lot of shows that are in production that are already ready to release. I know, like on Netflix, they always have, like, they release shows from other countries that came out in like 2021, right? So there's always something there. But I feel like maybe a bit of revisionist history, and maybe we didn't know everything that was really going on back then. That maybe we thought we were affected way more than we actually were affected.
Yeah, maybe we were just hyper-focused on Lost. And because that one show was affected, we were like, the world is ending. TV yeah. will never be the same.
TV will never be the same, especially if you go to Apple TV.
We talk about Lost
a whole hell of a lot. And not that I want to compare this show to Lost, but maybe like the initial episode felt very kind of like, ooh, mystery. Ooh, what's going on? Ooh, there's like...
And of course, that show is Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. Just Ted Lasso in like the Lost font.
Ted just comes forward.
Yeah! Whatever that song is. So the show is called Silo. It is on Apple TV. This is what we want to talk about first. Yeah. It is an American science fiction dystopian television series created by Graham Yost and based on the Wool series of and Silo series of novels by author Hugh Howey. It stars Rebecca Ferguson, who is also an executive producer. It premiered in May. Okay, there we go.
There you That's go.
Your Wikipedia minute. Why do we write it when Wikipedia has already crowdsourced it?
Welcome to Apathetic Enthusiasm, the show where we read the internet to you.
Premise. In a dystopian future where a community exists. Okay. So this show, I'd heard some good things about it. And you know, Ted Lasso is coming to its conclusion.
Winding down.
And which we'll talk about in a little bit, but I kept seeing it on Apple TV. I'm like, okay, I've heard it's good. Let's go ahead and check it out. And watched the first episode, and I liked it. And I felt very Fallout-ish, and it had enough mystery to it. I'm like, okay, all right, maybe we should check it out. And then I mentioned it to you, and then here we are. On Apathetic Enthusiasm, episode 219.
And that is our review. No, you did. We talk a lot, message each other throughout the week. And you're like, hey, I'm checking out the show Silo. You should check it out. We could talk about it on the show. And I'm like, yeah, check it out. I put on the first episode. Do not consult my significant other at all. She's just sitting there next to me. Turn it on. I'm like, hey, I'm going to check out the show. If you want to watch it with me. It's fine. She's like kind of half watching at first. Halfway through, she's locked in. By the end of the episode, she's like, how many of these are there? And how fast can we watch them? And by the next day, we had fully caught up. We'd binge watched like 5 episodes. Because the show is still being released. It is not, the entire season is not out and available. Mm-hmm. As of this recording.
I think there's maybe one or two episodes left.
I feel like there's got to. Well, okay, so it says there's, according to Wikipedia, there's 7 episodes, but is that total or is that just that, it's been released?
Oh no, there's 10 episodes total.
Yes.
They just released the 7th episode. There's 3 left.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, Wikipedia. The podcast where we read the internet to you. Here it is. But yeah, no, I agree with you completely. Very strong Fallout vibes. I mean, in a way where, like, what happens before most Fallout games, right? And but the same kind of like weird dystopian future. And yeah, it just very quickly. It seemed really interesting, and there was enough mystery and hooks in there about the lore of this society that for me is what was really interesting and grabbed my attention after the first episode.
Yeah. We say Fallout and talking about like before you play any Fallout game, like in every Fallout game, you're like, you're wandering the countryside, whatever, and you're fighting mutants and whatever. But all those games always start where you're in one of the silos, one of the Fallout shelters, and then you come out from the ground. But then, like, you explore other Fallout shelters throughout these games, and then there's stories about, like, why those shelters collapsed or
humanity is dead in each one of them, or maybe they got released and they moved out. This feels like a show that is like, here's one of those fallout shelters. Here's their story.
Yeah. If this had been branded as like a fallout show, it would have probably fit in perfectly with the lore. I could see very minor tweaks being done to make this align almost perfectly with Fallout lore in general. Yeah. And one of the cool things about Fallout is that every one of the vaults, as they're called in the game, has its own sort of purpose or societal differences at times. Some of the vaults were used for certain types of testing. Some of the vaults had differences in the way that their society worked inside versus others. And that's the thing that I really like about Silo, is it really explores what life would be like if for what, a century, how or more, a group of people have been living in this very large fallout shelter in the ground. And they take it a step further by introducing you in the first episode to the history of some sort of rebellion that, according to their history, destroyed all evidence and historical information about anything that happened prior to this rebellion. And so, realistically, you have a society in a very constrained environment who believes it is deadly to leave that environment, and they know nothing about their past further back than like 100 years.
Yeah. Silo. Now, so there's parts of the show it's a big mystery to find out like what is actually going on in the silo, and we keep saying fallout shelter, but we don't actually know the nature of the silo, like why, sure, why they're in the silo initially. But what we do know is there's a big screen that is tied to like a video camera that shows the outside, how desolate the outside world is. Right. So part of being in the silo is you don't ever say you want to go out, because if you say you want to go out, you got to go out. Periodically the lens on the camera gets dirty, and so the big screen that all these people watch, it starts to get dirty. So the people who go out, they're tasked with cleaning the lens, which is probably where the title Wool came in for the short story. But anyway,
interesting. Yeah.
Some people go out, sometimes they're forced out, sometimes they go out on their own free will. And they're not always no one actually expects them to clean all the time, but they always do clean the lens. Even if they don't want to go out there and they say, I'm never going to clean the lens, they go out there and they clean the lens. Why do they? Part of the mystery of the mystery. Show.
Yeah.
It's all tied around the mystery of like, what is going on? What insidiousness is going on in the silo? It's got Common in there. It's got Rebecca Ferguson. It's got David Oyelowo.
Tim Robinson.
Tim Robbins.
Anytime you can get Shawshank alum in something, sign me up.
So Travis, tell me what's your favorite kind of pieces to the show? Like, what sticks out to you? Like, is it the mystery? Is it the acting? What is it about this that
obviously the mysteries are what interest me. The mystery that's introduced in the pilot episode still is sort of the overarching mystery of the show, but I feel like they introduce this idea that maybe the world isn't what it seems. Maybe something nefarious is going on and they need to find answers as to why or what the truth is about what's outside the silo. And then within like three episodes, dramatic shift away from that idea for a period of time. The characters that are introduced in the pilot do not end up being the main characters of the show, which is fine. I'm fine with that, and I'm fine with a misdirection. I also think that the actual main character of the show, Juliet, who's played by Rebecca Ferguson, I think she's great. I think she does a good job. I have a hard time getting through an episode without singing songs from The Greatest Showman, because she's in that movie as well. And I don't know. I'm just my brain is wired weird.
I keep thinking of Rose the Hat from Dr. Sleep, because that's what she's in that.
Well. See, and now welcome to the dichotomy of apathetic enthusiasm. But yeah, I think her
character. Her character is a mechanic, drawn up from the core of the silo,
and from the down deep.
And she's brought into this mystery to us, and she ends up being the main character for the most part.
Yeah,
she's kind of an asshole.
Sure.
there's part of like she's gonna get killed like immediately because she's just like hating on everybody and everyone.
Yeah. I think the show is really interesting. Three episodes left. I'm hopeful for some really big payoffs in those three episodes. This is definitely the type of show that I think it would suffer from too long of a run. Mm-hmm. Right. We talked about Lost earlier, but some criticism of Lost is it sagged in the middle because they were trying to stretch things out too far. If this show intends to go beyond one season, I think it may be too far. There's a richness to the environment that you could do a lot of things with that environment, but because this show is introduced on this premise of some mystery of what's out there or what's really going on, the longer you delay that payoff, the more compelling your characters and the interactions and the environment have to be to keep us from just being like, okay, but who built the silo and why is it out there and why are people dying?
Where did the steel come from? what steel mill? Did it come from Pittsburgh? Somebody needs to explain it. I agree with that. The thing about mysteries, you can have a series that has mysteries in it, but it has to be like different environment. So if they had like maybe a different silo somewhere else, and then there's a different mystery, and then it becomes Fallout, right? It actually becomes Fallout.
It actually does.
You don't have Murder on the Orient Express and be like, I want a sequel, direct sequel to that, where they're on that same train and another murder happens. Right.
Yeah. Same sector, same characters.
And Pearl is like, come on, man. Kenneth Branagh,
done
like,
this.
with this mustache, like, ah,
yeah. I'm optimistic for the finale, the final three episodes. And yeah, I hope they tie some of these loose ends together. But yeah, it's really interesting. If you've been watching The Silo, check it out. Let us know what you think about it. And then we can maybe revisit it after the show is done, or we'll talk about it in like a post show somewhere when it's on the actual podcast. Final thoughts on Silo, Brandon, before we move on?
Yeah. All my Bluetooth technology all of a sudden is like, I don't want to work with your computer anymore.
That's really bizarre.
How bizarre. Yeah, it's very bizarre. Strange.
How bizarre.
Strange, strange, strange. Well, anyway, it's a good show. I like it. Sometimes it drags a little bit with the dialogue. Sometimes like the shots are a little too long, maybe. But I think for the most part, I enjoy it and I want to see what happens. So much so that because I know it's based on a book series, that I'm like, maybe I'll just read about what's going to happen next. I have some ideas and we can talk about that, you and I, later.
Yeah. Really, that's post-show material.
Post-show material.
As we stay in our single streaming app before moving out to other platforms, one other show, dare I say a flagship show for Apple TV Plus, Ted Lasso had its season 3 finale.
Mm-hmm.
Very recently, just in the last couple weeks, and we both watched it. We both watched the third season, and I think we're far enough away from the finale where we can talk about it as a whole. So, fair warning: if you are saving up Ted Lasso, you want to binge the whole thing, or you haven't watched the finale, we're going to be discussing that right now. So, spoiler warnings, go watch the show and then come back. I realized as I was working on some of the graphics.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For this episode, that we just talked about Ted Lasso like a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. When we talked about Mandalorian, we talked about Ted Lasso coming back for its final season.
Yeah.
Quote-unquote final season? Question marks. But yeah, now the season is done and we've seen all the episodes. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on how Ted Lasso concluded? And is there anything you liked or didn't like in particular?
I think that Ted Lasso ended nicely.
It did.
It ended like it and set out to be, which was a show about coming together, about people growing and figuring out what affects them and finding ways to grow. I think, you know, just as going into that spoiler territory, the it's summed up in Roy's his jump into the Diamond Dogs with him saying like, I'm a piece of shit, I'll never be better, and them having the conversation around the table, being like, well, people can change. People can change for the worse. People can change for the better. But like, small steps that you take are still steps in a direction. And, you know, you see throughout the series, people trying to better themselves and working through the issues and coming together and making each other better. And I think, you know, Nate was the one who was talking about, you know, you could change for the worse or you could change for the better. Him coming back to the club after his heel turn in season 2. And, you know, I think his redemption or their forgiveness of him is kind of indicative of that positivity of the show.
Yeah.
Which
is that something that you foresaw happening? Do you feel like that happened in a, were you satisfied with the way that redemption arc happened, or did it feel almost a little rushed or quick for you? I don't know.
Did I send you the article, the interview with him?
You did, but you sent it to me on a day when I was working, and I did not have time to read it.
Okay. All right. All right. There's an article with the actor who plays Nate, and he's talking about kind of fan stuff where they're like, you know, it was rushed and we didn't see what happened with him and the head of the other club. Like, how did he get Rupert? Like, how he quit. We didn't see his, like, his wallowing enough. We didn't see, like, how he, like, stepping back into the locker room for the first time, how everybody interacted with them. We didn't see a lot of that stuff. And he was like, I think that's not the point. The point is, like, you could have focused on those things.
Yeah.
But if you focus on those things, you give them more power, and then you then, like, that's what those things end up being about. So instead, you him coming in, and then, like, they're welcoming him in, and, like, you can see that he is welcomed again. Yeah. Then you can focus on other things.
And I think that's something that this show could have very easily dealt with, is like a lingering animosity or betrayal, right? Where, oh, Nate left us, he abandoned us, he was chasing money and power and fame over at West Ham, and he's dead to us, or he, you know. But that has always been something that, especially with the Ted Lasso character, has never been the case. He's been hurt by a lot of people, but he is forgiving and he's loving and he cares about people even when they do wrong by him. And so in those situations, the first time they play West Ham, he's still kind to Nate. He's still, you know, friendly with him. He's available until he's not, and Nate misses some opportunities there. But full circle, yeah, you could do a whole episode of how Nate comes back to Richmond and how, you know, oh, some people are slow to accept him or things like that. But I think it does sort of solidify the Lasso effect on the locker room, on the entire club, that Nate could do all those things, and then once he decides, oh, that's not what's important to me, and being the wonder kid at West Ham is not what it's all cracked up to be, immediately there's this shift. Yeah, no, you're back with us, you're back in your role, and yeah, you're not like a coach. Like, you're still a kit man, but you're back, and you're and they're not, you know, beating up on him like they were in season one anyway.
It goes back to, like, the one holdout of the whole thing was Coach Beard, and that interaction where he goes to Nate's house and you know, forgives him.
Yeah.
That is all we need to know about the rest of the team too, right? Yeah. Which is, like, they've all done bad stuff. They've all done things that they are ashamed about. The two people that went to the restaurant to ask him back. I didn't,
three of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't remember this, but, you know, like, oh yeah, Nate got bullied in the first season.
A lot. Like, that was like a plot line for the first season. Yeah. Yeah.
He's getting picked on so much in the first season. And I think, like, the people who went to the restaurant were the ones that welcomed him back.
Yeah.
And so that the actor also points that out too, is like, yeah, we could spell out a lot of these things, but we also think that our viewers are smart and they can pick up on those as well. Like, we just don't have to spoon feed for you to know that people are forgiven and people can change. So.
Yeah. The finale for me feels very much like, it's like a fairy tale story that doesn't necessarily have to have a fairy tale ending for everyone. Because even though everybody seems to be content or happy by the end of, minus maybe Rupert, content or happy with how things are going by the end of this show, it's not because everything went perfectly. they don't end up winning the championship, right? They come in second because, you know, Man City is able to win. None of that happens on screen, right? We that's all told to us. Lasso leaves. He doesn't decide, despite numerous opportunities and requests to stay, he doesn't stay with the team. He makes the decision to go back home to be with his family. Jamie and Roy, who's going to get the girl? Who's going to end up with Keely? Neither of them. But then at the same time, both of them kind of, right? Because they're able to maintain some friendships and things like that. They are able to maintain that friendship with each other, which I think is great. But it, in all of these instances where so many other shows or movies where the plot line really rides on who's getting the girl, will the team win the championship? Will the main character have personal fame and success? None of those things really seem to be the basis of success or positivity in this show, because those things don't all happen, but in the end they're all okay with it and they all grow as people. And I think that's an interesting way to write the show and to present it, to kind of tell the audience, like, yeah, not everything always ends up this perfect way, but life goes on and life can be beautiful despite those other things that may not have, you know, fallen your way.
There's fulfillment for all of the characters, whether it's a perfect ending or not. Ted being with his family, one dude being on the national team, the guy being able to kiss his boyfriend on the field at the end of it, right? Like a lot of those different things. Coach Beard marrying is crazy.
That was a critique I made. So I was like, Ted, I know
would be there.
Ted would be there.
He
would have to be there. Cannot.
Yeah. That was basically my one critique. Like, what? No, what? No, he would totally be there. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a bunch of those things. And so I think that's one. And then the manager, she ends up with the guy she met in Sweden or whatever.
Kind of
a critique on that.
I had a feeling they'd end up together. I didn't know he was going to be a pilot. I don't know. I think I told Sheena, I was like, yeah, she's going to go on a trip or something, and then she's going to find him or something. But anyway. I thought that was all right too. A little serendipitous, but
I think I would have been fine with her not having seen that guy again, because I like her turn where she's like, she decided not to sell the thing because one of her big things was to become a mother, and I think like when she was in the bar with her mom and the three guys at the pub went up to her and they're basically like, you're like our mother. Right. Like that was the turning point for like, sure, oh, sure. I've always wanted to be a mother in a way, like I'm a mother for all these fans.
Right? I do like that she didn't sell the club. I like that she kept it and that they're expanding it. Right. They're building in a women's team, but it really shows that arc for her as well of doing all this originally, hiring this unknowing football coach from America to ruin her ex-husband's team, and coming full circle to really loving and appreciating so sober podcast, by the way, appreciating the team and all of the people and holding on to it because of the value that it has to her, instead of just as a way to get back at somebody else. It's so well done. The show's just so good. They did such a good job. I want to ask you about these rumors, this speculation floating around the internet that season 3 is not the end, but that the show could somehow continue without the titular character Ted Lasso and Jason Sudeikis playing in that role. Would you still be interested in the show? I mean, there's such an attachment. We've talked about so many of these characters. Would you be interested in watching a fourth season that didn't include Ted? Or do you feel like that's just an attempt to continue with something that should probably be left alone where it is?
I think that I guess I'd have to depend on the trailers. It'd have to be like which direction that they go with it.
Yeah.
Again, the actor who plays Nate in his interview, I really got to get that link for it because it's good. I really liked what he had to say. The point is, and you kind of mentioned it, like it's not a fairy tale because it's not everything is perfect. It's not a nice, neat, perfect bow on everything. These people still have lives and they still have growing to do. And like Nate may not stick with his girlfriend forever, right? Like there's relationships there that to explore. And, he's not fixed. You know, he still has dad issues. He still has esteem issues. So I think there's ways to continue the story, but if Ted's not there, then it's more focused then on like, how do these people maintain that vision that the lasso way, in that absence, that vacuum, how do these folks maintain that? Right.
I feel like a huge part of the show is how Ted Lasso was able to kind of infuse his positivity and spirit into a lot of those other situations, and his presence, the effect it had on a multitude of things.
Yeah.
You take Ted Lasso away, all of those people and those characters who arguably could carry episodes, if not seasons, of the show by themselves, right? And I think it is important to realize that there were episodes of the show that didn't heavily feature Ted Lasso. He was, yeah. I mean, always there. He was part of the show. But by this third season, there were so many storylines that really dealt with those other characters and then would come back to what was going on with Ted. I think that's just one step further to remove him from that and allow the show to carry on. But Ted Lasso anymore. It's like Richmond Football, or it's a spinoff series, or
I feel like that was the arc of the three seasons, which is you're introduced to this guy. He puts his influence out there. He makes changes. He changes the way we look and feel about things. And then the second season is kind of the Empire Strikes Back of his, or all the anxiety stuff. And then Nate's heel turn. And then in the big critique for season three is like all these other storylines are going on all the time. Some of them didn't go anywhere, like Zava and maybe some of Keeley's publicity stuff. But the point of a lot of it was, even though he's not there, we know his character is there, still in the practices. He's still having those conversations. He's still motivating in ways, but we don't need to see him all there the entire time because we know he is there in spirit. Now, if he's like in the US and everyone is doing their own thing, then it becomes that conversation of, well, what's that vacuum like? We know he's not there day to day. You and I don't talk day to day.
Yeah.
And I can feel it when you're not around, you know, that vacuum.
I get it.
So depressing. I don't improve as a person without you around or something. I don't know.
We'll explore that more in the post show. All right. Well, wrapping up with Ted Lasso, we want to play for you this very special and very exclusive trailer from season four. This is Ted Lasso.
Here it is.
Coming this fall. two streaming services.
Hey, I'm in America.
Once a famed soccer coach, now has to bring his talents home. Ted Lasso, Little League Coach, season 4.
hey y'all, you got kick the ball.
You gotta believe. You got barbecue sauce on your jersey.
Ted Lasso, Little League.
Coming soon.
To theaters everywhere.
Anyway, Ted Lasso. Happy about it. It's a great show. If for some reason you missed it and we just spoiled the whole thing for you, go watch it. It's great. You should really check it out. Both these shows, of course, are on Apple TV Plus. Not a sponsor. Apple has way too much money to throw any our direction. We gotta wait for that Vision Pro thing to blow up in their faces.
But not enough.
Hopefully not literally.
But not enough money for the writers.
All right, we're gonna wrap up the what little time we have left in a video game segment. That's right, another video game is out. This one Brandon is playing. I am not playing, and not because I was not interested and or excited for this game. I do want to play Diablo 4. The problem is I'm so dang wrapped up in Tears of the Kingdom. Any video game time I'm playing, I'm still playing Tears of the Kingdom. I feel like I've barely scratched the surface still. I just gave up on the main quest line for a while because I love it so much. But
is this about you or is this about me? We want to talk.
I'm going to give you the rest of the time. I was taking 2 minutes, you jerk. All right. Brandon's going to talk about the devil now. Let's go.
All right. Well, the game series is called Diablo. It was released by Blizzard in 2023. And it came out on June 6th. It's a standard hack and slash isometric view where you go and you hack and slash monsters and demons, sometimes bats, sometimes corpses. Sometimes you fight Diablo. Sometimes you fight the other two prime evils, which is Baal or Mephisto. So Diablo 4, the last time we played Diablo together was Diablo Immortal.
Immortal.
For the mobile systems.
That's right.
We played the hell out of that. We knew Diablo 4 was coming, and I knew I was gonna pick it up, and so I did. I didn't buy the new Star Wars because I knew this was coming out. I didn't buy the Tears of the Kingdom all either because I'm like, that game is gonna be long. I need a lot of time to invest in that. I don't want to play Diablo. So if you played any Diablo, you basically played Diablo 4. That's about it. It's fun. I'm playing a necromancer.
What a glowing review, Brandon. played any Diablo game, you pretty much know the gist of it. Odds are you've already given Blizzard your money, and thank you for your time.
But yeah, I mean, it's like Halo. Like Halo games, you played a Halo game, you have played a Halo game, you've played them all.
it's not far from the truth.
It's not revolutionary. Yeah. Like you're like, okay, there's leveling up, and then there's you get loot all the time, and you're always constantly updating your loot, equipping the newest and greatest. Talent trees. The talent trees are pretty cool, and like you can do a lot of different things in them. You can get a mount at like once you're in Act 4. That's new stuff, but if you love any Diablo games, then I think you'll like this game. I know I'm playing the heck out of it. I started with a necromancer. I got the necromancer level 40, but the thing is like I started a character and then because I want I got stuck a sunk cost fallacy into that necromancer character, and so I'm like, I've already put so many hours into it, I gotta get this character to beat the game for me.
Yeah.
But I actually, one really cool thing is I'm playing on an Xbox Series X,
and you can play multiple people on the same system. So my son and I, like, we're leveling up at the same time. He likes minions, so he started up a necromancer, and I'm playing the wizard. And I like the wizard way more. I'm like, man, I really want to put a lot of time in this character instead.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get, I don't want to level up too much without the kid. And you can also do that online. So while we're doing on the same console, on the same screen, leveling up, Saturday night, old Unky Size, we were playing with him a little bit because he has the game. And yeah, there's so many people. So Omar in the chat, in the Twitch chat, talking about sending him an invite. I got some coworkers that are on there. Crumpy Shitsu, who always gives us his sub. He's playing. So Lucid, old Kevin is playing as well. So just
and then there's me all alone in the streets of Hyrule, turning diamonds into rupees. My video game economy is limited, both in time and funds. So I went Tears of the Kingdom. I don't regret it. I realize I'm going to miss peak like interest in Diablo in terms of the multiplayer aspects of this game. Diablo 4, it's the new hotness. People love it. Only the Diablo diehards are going to still be playing this game 6 to 12 months from now when I finally get around to probably picking it up at a reduced price, you know, from Blizzard or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I like Diablo's story single player campaigns, I think, more than the monotonous grind. And I know we've talked about this throughout all of the podcasts we've done. The grind and farming aspects of games are not my favorite aspects of the games.
Right.
There is an element of that in Tears of the Kingdom, depending on the things you're trying to do. But for the most part, it's a single player adventure that feels like it could have been an MMO if they let other people in. But it's just you exploring this world. Yeah. There's aspects of that in Diablo 4, obviously. But once you play through the single player campaign, the odds of me just like running the same dungeon over and over again doesn't feel as likely. I liked in Diablo Immortal the what is it called, where it's generated. Like
you're talking about like the different quests and the.
No, it's different. Just the fact that the dungeons themselves are like kind of randomly generated and stuff like that, and which I'm sure has been an aspect of the game for a while now. But
I haven't beaten the main campaign yet. But I've heard that once you beat the main campaign, a bunch of other stuff opens up. It's probably more along the lines of that, right? Like the more procedurally generated versus standard design dungeons.
What
I will say, you know, I talked about standard hack and slash, like if you like Diablo, you like Diablo. What I would say is that this story feels, I like the story for this one more than I liked the one in Diablo 3. I think partially is, I don't know if it's because I didn't pay close enough attention to the Diablo 3 story, but it didn't seem very memorable to me. Like, I don't actually remember what happened. You go to heaven eventually.
Yeah.
And you kill a bunch of angels, you know, like what happened? I don't remember. But this one, what I like about it is Lilith, the daughter of hatred. She's very prominent throughout the game. So you have a very clear sense of you need to find her. You continuously see visions of her in cutscenes, and so like you always know that it's her you're chasing after. Some of the side quests are standard side quests, so like they don't matter. But like the main main story, it's like, okay, I know what we're trying to do. I know what my goal is. It's to stop Lilith from doing something. And what she does, that's the mystery that is threaded throughout the game.
All right.
So I like it. I like it from that way.
Well, if you like playing Diablo 4, keep doing it.
Keep doing it. Barnyard Cruise.
Yeah. Add Brandon. I won't be there. And if you have any tips on how I can beat some of these side quests, hit me up. I don't know. I just Google them. It's fine. I just Google
it. It's fine. It's fine.
I did get to a point where I was like, I'm old enough. I can just Google the answers to some of these because I'm, what am I trying to prove? what am I trying to prove here?
It's not like you're at a trivia night and, you know, and you're like cheating in that way and you're competing against other people. No, it's just you. And you know what?
I have never used an item glitch. Not once. Will not do it. Not my thing.
I would have done it earlier.
You would have done it day one. you'd have had all the diamonds, maxed out your armor, built an astromechs or something. Yeah.
Instantly. Well, no, not instantly. I like to play the game a little bit first and then be like, all right, I'm trying to beat this game. I don't want to be in here forever.
All right, let me use a time hack and get all the turnips in my Animal Crossing house now.
I don't want to spend forever in this game, so I'm going to spend forever figuring out how I can shorten the game. Like playing Grand Theft Auto Online, I played a lot with Matt and Aaron and those guys, got a lot of money, did a lot of heists with Matt, and I was like, I don't want to, Matt's not around, I want money. There has to be some kind of glitches, whatever, to get extra money. And sure enough, there's some duplication glitches where like you buy like the cheapest car, whatever, there's dupes and like millions of dollars eventually, because I'm like, I'm tired of waiting to earn money the grindy way.
Yeah.
And in GTA Online, it's very grindy.
So grindy. So bump and grindy in GTA. Anyway, that's video game talk. That's Apathetic Enthusiasm. That is our show. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being here. If you are a diehard Apathetic Enthusiasm listener, I hate to break it to you, but you're going to miss us for a week because some way, somehow, next week, Brandon and I are going to find something Rick and Morty related to talk about. That's right. A brand new episode of Interdimensional RSS is coming your way. So if you're a fan of Rick and Morty content, make sure that you're subscribed in all the appropriate places. Otherwise, just come right back here, twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm or YouTube. We're going to go do our Twitch only post show. If you're a patron, you can catch it there as well. Thanks to everybody for watching, for listening. And until next time, I'm Travis.
And I am Brandon. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.